This is a podcast from Shooting People.
Hello, it's Andy Conway and welcome to another Shooting Screenwriters show. This month, I'm talking to Lucy Prebble, creator of the hit TV drama Secret Diary of a Call Girl. She came to give a talk to the Cheltenham Screenwriters Festival this summer and very kindly took half an hour out, especially to talk to Shooting Screenwriters. Okay, I'm here with Lucy Prebble. Thanks for talking to us. It's great to have you. And you're here at the Cheltenham Screenwriters Festival largely to talk about the Secret Diary of a Call Girl.
That's right, yes. Yes, that's the series I created for ITV2.
Okay, we'll talk about that. But I think, first of all, I think most of our listeners want to kind of know how you got started, how you broke into the industry as a screenwriter.
Right. Well, I came up through theatre, which I guess is a way that quite a few people do go into it, and I think a really quite a useful way, because the thing about theatre is, practically speaking, I think it's quite a lot easier to put a play on than it is to make a full-length feature film, or obviously to get television episodes made. So when you start working in theatre as a writer, even if you, for example, I started off as a student in theatre, and also, you know, festivals, that kind of thing, where you go along with your mates, and you learn an awful lot about what audiences will and won't put up with very, very quickly doing that, because they're right in front of you, and you can see them, and you can see that they're bored, or you can see that they find this funny, or whatever it is. So you learn an awful lot about how a story works, how characters work, and how to basically do a show. And I think that's incredibly useful, because if you start cold just writing for screen, you have really pretty much only your own opinion to fall back on, which is obviously incredibly important, but not the be all and end all, because you should be writing it for an audience, whatever it is. And also, or if you're very, very lucky and you're writing for screen and you immediately get employed on some level, you're probably writing for producers, which is also quite a dangerous thing, for obvious reasons, that, you know, their agenda is probably slightly different from yours. What they, you know, if they bought you out, or, you know, they've bought a treatment or so on, it becomes their project. So you have a very limited amount of time to find your own voice, if that's not too sort of dull a thing to say, but, you know, or just to learn how to write, which I don't think is a natural gift. I think, yeah, dialogue possibly. I think there are some people who can or can't do dialogue, but I think there's an awful lot that you can learn, and theatre for me was a really, really good way of doing that. And then by the time I started working in TV, I had a few things down. Not, you know, it's a very different thing, don't get me wrong, but I had a few things down that were very useful to come up with, you know, mm-hmm. to come along with.
So your first moves into television, how did that come about?
Well, I think, like a lot of people, I did TV work that never got made. First thing was, I was approached by various people who'd seen work that I'd done on stage. And that tends to happen. You get TV producers who do go along to new writing theatres, which I think is a very good thing. And they kind of try and spot people who they think could write for television, or for film indeed. And I was approached by quite a few of them, and I'd say 90% of meetings come to nothing. That seems to be my experience anyway, that you go along and you meet people and you have a chat about, you know, a particular project they're thinking about, and then you never hear from them again. And then I met up with a company called Tiger Aspect, who I got on with very well, and we started working on a one-off drama for Channel 4, and I worked very hard on that. I got commissioned to script. It was the first thing I'd written for television. And that was, you know, that was very, to be paid to write. I mean, you're paid to write in theatre, but you're paid to write nothing. Mm-hmm. You're paid nothing to write, is what I mean. You've got no money, and you kind of work really hard, and then TV come along and they kind of give you some money, and it's a bit of a shock, in a good way. And this one-off drama never got made. It was commissioned to script. They read the script and said, I don't think we're going to do this, which, again, very common experience, and it's, you know, I'm sure most people I know have had the same sort of thing. But what it did, which was great, was also gave me a bit of training in writing for TV, because obviously the process is so different. You have so many people, whether it's the production company or the channel, or someone who's executive produce attached, you know, who have a say on what you've written. And you kind of, you are employed to please all of those people, but you also fundamentally, first and foremost, have to please yourself. And that can be very, very difficult to try and tick all these boxes. So that didn't get made, but I learned a tremendous amount about really kind of simple stuff, like how you, you know, when the best time to cut is in a script, when bits of story that you think are essential to the plot actually don't need to be shown. Things like that, which on screen have a certain rhythm to them and a certain power, which you will never quite understand if you don't have a go at writing for screen. So I learned a lot by doing that, and then also worked on a couple of other projects that again didn't make it to light, and then got my, well, I suppose you would say, break, in the sense that Secret Diary of a Call Girl did get made, and that was the next project. Yeah, so it was kind of, you know, quite a straightforward journey, but also I think most people of the level of experience that I have, which is not that much, would not expect to get a series created by them on, you know, by a channel that hasn't ever had an original drama on it before. So it was also a really big baptism of fire, because I was having to learn very, very quickly how to do a job which, you know, I hadn't really been doing for that long. And so that was quite scary, but also brilliant.
It does sound incredibly scary. And you're kind of coming into it, first of all, with hardly any experience of writing for a completely new medium.
Yes, absolutely, that's true. But I'm also a huge fan of television. Coming from theatre, a lot of people, I think, have a slightly snobbish and sometimes, quite rightly, response to television. There are some people who kind of, you know, you look at the number of channels, particularly quite a lot of British stuff, reality stuff, you know, stuff that we're filling channels with, and I think a lot of people feel it's kind of a medium that's lost its way or something like that. I don't really feel that. I love television. I've always loved television. I feel like I was raised by television, and I adore it, and it kind of, I think it comes quite naturally to me, in comparison to other media that I've tried to write, you know. The rhythm of it, the way that stories and characters grow over episodes and then later over series. I mean, some of my favourite pieces of art that I've ever experienced have been on television. Okay. So I don't have a... I love it, and I'm not ashamed of that.
Let's talk about some of the television that's kind of inspired you then.
Okay, yeah, I mean, rather predictably, most of it's American drama, or British comedy, actually. I say predictably because I think a lot of... It's quite funny, commissioning editors, you go, you know, as a writer, quite often you go in, and they sort of go, okay, what sort of stuff do you like? And you, you know, you come out with Six Feet Under, The Sopranos, The Wire... you know, really, really great iconic shows of the last 10, 15 years. And they all cut, you know, you just see them kind of sigh inside, because they get this all the time from British writers who are so desperate to be allowed to or to be able to make series of the quality that America, particularly the prescription channels, can make. So, yeah, I'm. But also, the other thing I think Britain does really well is some comedy. I think things like The Thick of It, stuff like that, where what you're watching is very much like one person's vision done brilliantly. You know, it's cheap, it looks cheap, it's supposed to look cheap, it's incredibly funny, it's slightly, you know, offensive and satirical, and but, you know, you don't need to analyse it that much to enjoy it. So I think we do that quite well, because I think we allow comedy writers a little bit more leeway than we allow dramatic writers in television in this country. I think people kind of think, well, this guy's funny or this girl's funny, let them go and do what they do and then we'll see, as long as it's cheap. And I think that's actually quite a good attitude. And you sometimes, not always, but you sometimes get really good creative stuff coming back from that, because you're sort of letting a little team of people go off and do what they want to do. Whereas in my brief experience so far, drama finds that quite hard, because there's more money that's at stake, and therefore more people who want levels of control. So you get a bit of a kind of dissipation of who's in charge, and sometimes that, you know, that isn't always for the best for a show sometimes. But yeah, I'm like everybody, I think, my sort of age, you've kind of grown up watching every episode of The Simpsons, just, and you've just sort of absorbed it through osmosis. And yeah, like I said, Six Feet Under, Sopranos, Deadwood, great box set series like that, that actually you will watch over a weekend and just feel changed by, however wanky that sounds. Sorry, can I swear? Probably
yeah,
not.
You yeah. Can swear okay. as much as you like.
No, I'm not saying I want to particularly, but I suddenly thought, oh, I should be.
We then come to Secret Diary of a Cool Girl and a series you created.
Yeah, although it's got quite an unusual origin because it came from a blog. And again, that was another thing that kind of was interesting about it, that it was, I think it's the first show that's been created from a weblog. And I was an avid reader of it. I mean, I read a lot of blogs. I'm a writer. I'm very kind of bored and lonely most of the time. So I spend a lot of time on the internet kind of, you know, just looking at other people's lives and making notes. And it was one of many blogs that I was reading at that time. And during that period as well, I'd been saying to my agent that I would love to do something about escorts. Partly because I knew someone vaguely when I was studying who sort of dabbled in that world a little bit. And I'd always been kind of fascinated by it, like I think most people are, because it's a purient fascination. And also, it seemed to me an area that hadn't been looked at, particularly on television. And I thought that was quite odd because it seems to me a subject which is quite well suited to television. Because if you make a film, like, for example, the great original film, Belle de Jour, you know, you actually normally have, because it's one arc that you're working in, you normally find yourself having to condemn or celebrate amoral behaviour, because it's one arc, and therefore there has to be an ending, and therefore the ending is, you know, that she dies, or that she does, you know, does this. And actually in television you are freed slightly from that, because even though obviously you have an arc of every episode, one episode could be fairly celebratory and interesting and exciting about what she's doing, another episode could be quite the reverse. And that seems to be truer to life, and certainly to the experience of working in that profession. So I was reading this blog and thinking that, and I sort of had vague ideas about doing kind of ensemble piece where you kind of see four different women who are doing the same job, blah, blah, blah. And I'd always been talking to my agent about this, and I mentioned the blog to her. Turns out the rights of the blog were bought by Tiger Aspect, who the company I mentioned earlier, who I'd worked with on a project that never got made. So I knew them. So I went along, and this is a very rare occurrence in television for things to kind of collide happily like that. I went along and said, I'm fascinated by this thing. I think it would make great television. And they said, well, we've got the rights. We think that too, but we've no idea how to do it. Well, that sounds like, I'm sure they had some idea how to do it, but they pretty much did say that to me. Because, you know, they didn't have a writer attached, and I think it's obviously a specific subject where you need the right person. So we were kind of in the room just sort of throwing ideas about and talking about, you know, what it could be like. And came up basically with trying to adapt the blog, which I then did. The woman herself, Belle, made her blog into a book on the side. Unrelated to this, she got a publishing deal. So we then had a book to kind of work from. And we actually ended up using very, very little of that, because it was great stuff, but it's a diary. And the thing about diaries is they tend to be quite contemplative and you know, they're sort of a series of moments, and a series of moments work beautifully in a book, terribly on television, because television is, you know, all about story, basically, quite often. And if you don't have, you know, story churning over, then people don't tend to want to watch it. So we had to come up with a lot of original stuff that wasn't in the book, but kind of had the feel of the book. And for that reason we did an awful lot of research, speaking to both Belle herself, who's the woman who wrote the material, and loads of other women who work in that industry. And that's where a lot of the stories came from, and then I started writing. Originally, I mean, also another thing that happens, I just wonder if practically it's interesting for people in this industry, I don't know. Practically, obviously, you get rejected a lot quite often before you get anything made. So it wasn't like we came up with this idea, you know, with the producers, and it was sort of all went ahead. There was a channel attached to it who were developing it, who dropped it, and that happens a lot. And then it all went quiet, so there was a whole year of my life when this was totally dead and I was trying to get back into theatre and do other work. And then you get a phone call saying, you know, Billy Piper's read your scripts and really, really likes them, which is a hell of a phone call to get. That was quite fun and nice.
How had you got the scripts?
The head of drama at Tiger Aspect very wisely had decided not to let it lie and had decided to send it to a few people. Well, I don't even think a few people. I think he kind of knew that Billy's a very good actress, and also that it might be the sort of thing she'd consider doing. And so I think he sent it to her very specifically thinking, why don't you have a look at this? And that was obviously quite an intelligent move because she liked it, was interested in it, met up with me and the producers, and we got on well. And then as soon as that happens, suddenly, and quite rightly, but suddenly, all these channels start getting interested, which is, again, very, you know, useful way of learning about how the industry works, in that it doesn't, you know, sometimes the quality of your writing doesn't matter, sometimes the quality of the star attached matters, and that's, you know, fair enough. And then we were on ITV2.
But it's the quality of the writing that attracts the star.
Yes, exactly. So it is, you know, it is related, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that was a useful lesson for me, because you get quite a lot of people working in production in television who, you know, can't put their weight behind work that they might really want to, because they know it's not going to get anywhere. They know it's not going to get made. They know they can't get the financing for it. So it's very understandable. But actually, relationships you have as a creative person, as opposed to, I suppose, the more production side of it, you if you have relationships with directors and actors as a writer, I found that to be tremendously useful, in a way that kind of networking with channels and producers, actually, I find very dull and mostly quite pointless. Because if you're a writer and you've got a good enough script, most times people will be interested in you. But actually, if you can persuade really talented people to kind of look at your stuff and maybe even be in it or direct it, I think you're onto more of a winner, to be honest. And then suddenly the producers will turn up. Don't worry about that. They'll arrive.
Oh, yeah. At the point when Billy came on board, had you written every episode of the first series?
No, I don't believe so. I think we'd done four, although I might be wrong, because I can't exactly remember. It was certainly three or four, and there was vague outlines of other later episodes. So it was clear what stories were going to turn up. But also another really useful thing to do, and this happens sometimes in theatre when people kind of create shows, new shows, is it's really useful if you've got a lead actor like Billy, who is carrying the show in a sense of, you know, she's in almost every scene. It seems crazy to not ask her what she thinks about stuff, because that's another thing. You know, there are storylines which are specifically because, you know, you get to know Billy a little bit, you talked about what she finds fascinating about the world of it, and you pick that out and you use what she likes, what she's interested in, what she can do really well to write those other scripts. So actually, I think there's a real advantage to not having everything written. I mean, it's rare that you're, I suppose, in that position. But I suppose be open. I would say also it's great to be open to changing stuff or creating more stuff, more material, specifically for actors or directors. Because if you know they can do something really well, put it in, because it'll make you look really good as a writer. It'll make it look like, wow, you're really creative. Whereas, no, you've just nicked the fact that this actor is a great, you know, whatever, mimic or whatever they are.
I'm interested in the format of the show, because you went for the half-hour episode format, when it's kind of traditionally associated with the sitcom, isn't it?
Yeah, for good reason, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what made you go for that length?
Well, it wasn't my choice.
Right.
It was... I wanted them to be longer. I did make that very clear, but, you know, that wasn't the job that I got. In the end, I think there were very clear pros to the length in as well as cons. I think I felt that I really wanted a bit more time to, you know, tell slightly bigger, deeper stories, maybe include other characters a bit more. But there were a lot of people who felt that there's something going on at the moment with half-hour dramas. Californication in America, Weeds is an example of another one. I mean, I would say that they are longer because they don't have the advert breaks that we had to have on ITV2, which means that they have about five more minutes, possibly, which I think is good. So I was keen for them to be longer, but I think what it does is kind of serves as a quick hit, a taster, and also because it's very much from one person's point of view, like the diary or a blog is. You know, you don't actually need a tremendous amount of time if you're only looking at one person to tell the story that you want to tell. But I would say what I learned quite quickly is that it's a difficult time frame to work in. It's a difficult episode slot because it is almost always associated with the sitcom or the soap opera. And I think there's good reason for that, because you either end up in a situation like you do with the soap opera, where you are dealing with a large number of people, but you're dealing with very, very long-running storylines. And people are very... know those characters very well, and your audience is very familiar and comfortable. The sitcom, smaller group of characters, and fundamentally the biggest difference is that at the end of most sitcoms, everything is back pretty much the way it was at the beginning. Although you have a story in movement, you begin each sitcom not necessarily having to seen the one before. Mm. And I think you pretty much have to make a choice between those two models to write in half an hour. And I think we chose the sitcom model a little bit more, as in you could probably watch most of those episodes in any order and not be too confused. And that was very much a note from the channel. That's what they wanted. And yeah, I think there's probably more of a middle ground to be had, which I think something like Weeds or Californication shows really well.
Yeah, Entourage is another
example. Oh, of course, Entourage, really exactly. Love, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Entourage does it very well. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So there are more of these half an hour dramas coming up, and I think it's also because the generation of people who are watching them, or you know, most of their audiences are quite happy to be told things very quickly. And it's a bit of a cliche because it sort of panders to that, oh, the MTV generation, they don't have much of a concentration span. I think it's the reverse of that. I think they're cleverer. I think that they're used, you know, they've been brought up on The Simpsons, they've been brought up on shows where let the plot turn 10 times in the first act, fine, you know, and we're smart enough to get what's going on without having to see the person go up the stairs, go into the room, pick up the knife. So I think it's fine, but what it does do is give a slightly lighter weight feel to a show. I mean, if obviously you watch something like Deadwood or The Sopranos, you know, it could never be a half an hour show, and quite rightly. And so I think what you kind of gain in speed, you will lose a little bit in depth. Mm-hmm. I think that's almost inevitable.
So we're at the point now where you've written that whole first season. What about the reception of it and how it was kind of launched? And
yeah, well, it's really interesting because it's just gone on in America on Showtime. And different response. Very mixed reviews, again, to be expected. And fair enough, there are some, quite a lot of them I agree with on both sides. But generally a much warmer, much more positive response than this country. And it's very interesting. And I think that might have been... There's all sorts of things. I think America are more used to having amoral central characters. They're more used to having, on things like Showtime and HBO, I mean, you know, having kind of what you'd think of as issues that are borderline illegal being discussed and being, you know, brought up. And also, I think they marketed it very, very well. Their mm-hmm. strategy and their... they're just very good at it. They're just very good in that country at working out how to make sure that the audience that they know will like it will watch it. And they marketed it much more as a comedy because it is quite light and comic. And they marketed it with, you know, quite friendly and Sex and the City style shots of her. And I think there was a different approach here that was much more full on and much more kind of aggressive. For better and for worse, because, you know, there's something to be said for trying to upset people a little bit. Not to, you know, actually upset them, but to piss them off a little bit. There's something to be said for not just putting out another show that has the same actors in it doing the same thing. So I'm not, you know, I think there's things to be said for it, but I think we set ourselves up a little bit for what happened, and what happened was The Guardian decided this was the worst thing that, you know, had happened for a long time, and there was an awful lot of political criticism of it. Rather than, there was artistic criticism for it as well, but I think the political stuff really overshadowed that, which I found interesting and yeah, a little bit painful.
God, I'm writing something along similar lines myself at the moment.
Oh, really?
And it's this attitude to sex that we have in this
country. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I just find it's...
It's so funny. And also, you know, it's like there's no violence in these episodes, and there's no violence because... Like, I was hanging around and talking to a large number of escorts, like, by the time the show was kind of being made, for research purposes, and every single one of them said, please don't portray us like victims. Yeah. You know, there are it's a tiny sliver at the top of an industry which is filled with violence and exploitation and drugs and stuff like that, but it is a sliver, it does exist, and these women do exist. I've met them, can introduce anyone to them, and they are intelligent, fascinating, self-aware women who have never been represented on television anything other than body bags before. And, you know, to have those women kind of say, please don't, you know, cop out and pretend like it's all about the abuse and it's, you know, because my life is not like that. And then you go when you try and do them some sort of justice, or at least just tell the story that I wanted to tell anyway. And then, of course, another group of women, decide, you know, who work in The Guardian or men, you know, decide that you're betraying all sisterhood. And you kind of, well, fuck off. Because it's all, it is also a lot about that sex is always sort of a red button to people, particularly in this country. And we will put up quite happily with shows which represent violence, you know, violence where the central character does shoot people through the head and you still go, oh, but he's lovable, isn't he, Tony? You know, in The Sopranos, obviously, and fair enough, because it's that well done. But that sex is a subject that people don't really want you to be really showing, and certainly not being challenging and different about. And I did, I must admit, I was naive and I wasn't quite expecting it.
Now you've got the experience of that first season under your belt. The second season is imminent.
Yes, I've written the first two episodes of that. And there are other writers who've worked on it as well. So I sort of kicked off the series, really. And I think that's just finishing filming about now. As I said, to be aired in the autumn and... yeah, I don't want to spoil anything too much.
No,
too much about that.
But in terms of the experience of writing it, how was that different from?
Well, it's. I think the biggest thing was to correct anything. Correct sounds a bit hard. Like, you learn a lot as a writer, especially me. I mean, I never, like I said, I've never had anything on television before. So I wrote this series and learned as I was going in the most hilarious fashion. Like, I watched some of the first episode, and there are bits of it where I go, oh my god, you know, what was I doing? And not in a political, just the dialogue moments and particularly structural moments where I do sort of go, oh. But I think everyone has that experience. So you come out of sex series and what you want to do is to do it better. But the last thing I wanted to do, and Billy as well, I don't know, I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying this on her behalf, but was to apologise in any fashion. You know, in terms of, there were people who really took a stand against it, and I would hate to think that you then go away and go, well, how can I make them like me, because I don't care if they like me, and I'm pretty sure Billy doesn't either. So, you know, yeah, it's a fine line basically between doing a better job for you and not trying to please imaginary, you know, because the audiences were good, people liked it, you know. Some people liked it, not everyone watched it, it's fine. But yeah, I'm not going into the game of pleasing critics, because that's a game you can't win.
Have you been kind of show running it? Have you been across the other writers' scripts?
I didn't have the time to do that as much as I would have liked. What I want to do in the future on series is to be a showrunner. And I think, actually, to go back to, brings us quite nicely around right to the beginning of what we're talking about, I think one thing that professionally and just personally, I think British television could do much better is to allow those writers who want to and have the ability to showrun. Because the other thing that really joins together those series that most people who love television do really like is that the person who creates and writes and sort of originates the idea does have that level of showrunning control and even executive producer status and that sort of thing. And that is not unusual in America. And I think it can produce really great work. And I think that's something that I will certainly be always doing in the future if I can.
Are you working on anything else? That's obviously it's going to be quite far away, but what else are you working on?
Quite a few things. I'm just at the very beginning of doing a show which is about the six wives of Henry VIII, but each episode specifically from each different wife's point of view. So it's kind of, I think it's subject matter that has been done before, but I think I want to do a very, very kind of female and interesting and different take on it. So it's kind of like six episodes, hour longs, each of them from each of the wives' perspectives. And other than that, I'm going back to theatre a bit. I'm doing a play next year about the fall of Enron and corporate fraud, and it's a big kind of big song and dance number about corporate fraud, which is going to be more interesting than that sounds. So, yeah.
It sounds very interesting.
Yeah. No, I just, it's quite a dry subject matter, but I'm turning into something a bit crazy, I hope. So, yeah, there's lots of stuff going on.
Excellent. Well, thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, not at all.
It's been a real pleasure, and I'll look out for the forthcoming second season.
Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you.
Cheers.
Season 2 of Secret Diary of a Call Girl is showing on ITV2 in the UK right now and will be available on DVD pretty soon afterwards. A big thank you to Lucy Preble for talking to us, and to David Pearson and everyone else at the Cheltenham Screenwriters Festival for making this interview possible. Remember, if you're not a Shooting People member, you can join at shootingpeople.org. If you are a member, then you should know all about our Screenwriters Network Bulletin, which goes out to about 10,000 screenwriters around the world every weekday. So get subscribing and joining the debate. Thanks for listening. See you soon.